Airtime Prime. Hi guys, welcome back to Airtime Prime. This is the third episode. I think we fixed the light, because you know what I mean. And today we have, do you want to say something?
Yeah, what's up? We're back. Episode 3. 3.1, actually.
3.1.
Just because.
Yeah. Anyway, welcome back to Airtime Prime. And today we have a guest. His name is Dwayne. Dwayne, he's a youth worker. He's from Uganda.
Yeah, from Uganda. Born and raised here from Uganda. I've been back. I mean, I was living there for quite some time, you know, during my childhood. I know it sounds bad when I say that, because I wasn't a child that far back. But yeah, during my childhood, I was sent down there to sort of like, you know, learn the ways and stuff. So, you know, I'm back here now. Got back here like college time, and now just try to change over my life and stuff.
How long did you actually live in Uganda?
Well, I was on and off. I was there for like 9 years.
Wow.
Yeah, on and off, man.
I went to Uganda, actually. Mm. I went there for about 3 weeks before I went to Kenya.
Oh, okay.
I took the bus from Kampala to
Nairobi.
It was a nice experience.
I mean, Uganda's I've got mixed emotions about that place. Like, it's got its good parts and it's got its bad parts, so pros and cons. But yeah,
it's
very
good.
I think if I can summarize it, it's a very interesting place. That's the best way to put it. Because
I think everyone should go see there with their own eye before you judging it.
Because that's what I'm saying.
Yeah. When I went there, there was like protests going on. Like,
what year was this?
It was 2018, end of 2018.
Oh, okay.
All right.
Fair enough. What was the protest about?
There's always protests going on. There's basically at the moment there's new opposition. That's Bobby Wine at the moment. He's trying to, he used to be a musician, then he transitioned to politics. So now he's trying to become the new president of the country. And now we've got the current president there. That's Museveni. He's been ruling for almost 40 years. It's actually mad.
There's corruptions everywhere in the country.
Oh, yeah, 100%. There's always
corruption. Even here in the UK, like, there's a lot of corruption, as we know.
But usually the politics in Uganda, I mean, it's not the first time it's happened. It's always happening. So in Uganda, for instance, like, whenever there's opposition trying to do some form of, like, you know, how you... What's this terminology they do when you're going out to campaign? That's it. When you're going out to these campaign rallies, you'll always arrest the opposition and say, oh, you're causing, you know, anarchy in this area, have him arrested. But he does that as a way to sort of stop them from campaigning, because he doesn't want people to sway towards the opposition. So that's his way of doing it. He's been doing it for years in prisons. You then obviously there's riots breaking out, protests breaking out, so it's the same old thing each and every time. So whenever you hear there's a presidential candidate, there's presidency going on, or like there's a someone trying to whenever they're doing the elections, just know, right, there's always going to be some form of protest in the country. Sometimes it's evil, sometimes it's bad, sometimes it's calm, but most of the times it's always a mess. I mean, I know in Kenya, when I was there, when I was in Uganda at the time, when I think there was protest in Kenya, people were losing their lives. Like, there was people, like, literally, and I think, you know, with the tricky thing in Kenya, it's always about, there's a lot of tribalism there, so people want to see their tribal.
There's 149 tribe in Kenya,
but there's only like two who are predominantly the ones who are always in power. So it's always those two sort of tribes that are always fighting. So I think during that time period, there was a lot of lives lost. In fact, it sort of impacted in Uganda as well. So people in Uganda were feeling it as well, because obviously there's a lot of international students in Uganda. Some of them come to Uganda to study and everything like that. So they were feeling it as well. There's always fights. People were killed. People were actually killed.
When I was there, there was shooting going on. There was like
crazy.
Like they put the bombs on. Like, I have no clue. I was not nearby. But there was stuff was happening. Like, I was like, should I be aware? Should I be not? And I was not listening to news or what's going on. But the place that where I was staying is about 20 minutes away from walking distance. I'm talking about walking distance. Mm-hmm. There was a massive bombing stuff going on. But it was interesting to see. But it was towards the way politician stuff going on. There's nothing. It might affect to you publics. But the where I was, it was like nothing was going on there.
But you want to hear something sad, right? I don't know if some people might call it sad, but I call it sad. That's the norm. That's the norm there. Like it's nothing to be over, nothing to really overthink about. Like it happens. It happens. That's that's Uganda for you. I can only speak for Uganda because obviously I've been there. I've been living there. I can't speak for other countries.
It's changing. I can see it's changing. Like they're trying to improve it, but obviously, once the corruption's over, I don't think it will ever over. But once the good leader will come up.
You know what? I think people have been saying this for years, and Seven said this himself. He said, right, he came by the gun, so he's going to go by the gun. That was his policy. So the only way he's gonna be overthrown, which is it's going to happen, is he's going to have to go out with... He's gonna have to go out shooting. He even said it, because he came into power that way, and he's going to leave out of power that way. So unfortunately, you can't get rid of a dictator by using diplomacy. Like, I think he's shown it year in and year out. Like, you can't use diplomacy in a place like that, unfortunately. I mean, I would love to see diplomacy being used, like people using, you know, just their power, their connections to change the place, but they can't do that. So, you know, if someone wants to overthrow him, unfortunately, they're going to have to go to war, which mm-hmm. is what, obviously, I'm worried about, because obviously I've got my family there as well, so...
Are they in Kampala or are they somewhere?
Kampala. I mean, regardless, you've got family there. Like, if there's a war going on, there's a war's going
to
go on.
But it's only happening in city, though. But other than, like, if you go to, what's the river? River Nile,
yeah.
Yeah, so if you go to Gingerside, yeah. It's so peaceful. Like, up to the north, it's so beautiful. There's a lot of farming going on.
Okay.
Yeah, there's a lot of interesting places. Just in Kampala, the city.
It's true.
There's a lot of corruption.
If I can break this down to you though, like unfortunately, again, you know, we've got different tribes in Uganda. Like we've got like over 52 tribes in Uganda, but the predominant ones, it's almost like a black and white thing. Unfortunately, you know how there's different races, but it's always black and white who are at each other's throats. Mm-hmm. So if we look at Uganda now, there's the Buganda tribe and there's the Minankole tribe. These two tribes are always fighting, and these are the ones who always predominantly want to be in power. These are the ones who are always butting heads. So, you know, there's a saying, right? There's an African proverb, right, where they say, you know, when the elephants are fighting, the grass suffers. So if these two people are fighting, right, the whole country's going to feel it. If these two tribes are fighting, the whole country's going to
feel it. When you look into
politics and stuff, like, yes, there's other people, like, you know, you go to, like, the village, like, they've got their local tribal person who's their leader and stuff like that, their politician, but or their member of parliament, but they're not really spoken of. It's the ones who are basically, like I said, those two tribes, Buganda and Minankole. These are the two biggest problems in Uganda at the moment. These two can't. They've always butting heads. They've been butting heads from the beginning of time. They've always been butting heads.
You know, violence equal power. That's what I see. Yes.
Well, violence is a form of expression. Like people express themselves through violence sometimes. So.
So that's how fear equal power. If you put enough fear into people, they'll be scared, and you can have power over them. You get where I'm coming from?
Of course, newspapers are full of fear, anyways, and the news.
Yeah, that's how they get us. I would say.
So people are scared to come out of the house.
Yeah, people are scared to go out and then buy their own grocery from a shop. Anyway, back to London. When did you move to London?
I mean, I've been living here. I came back here officially in 2000. It's been a while now. 2010 was it? Been back here since 2010 and haven't looked back ever since. I went back probably 2015, but that was for some personal stuff,
mm-hmm.
my family. So yeah, went back 2015 and really haven't been back to Uganda since then. But yeah, I've been just, you know, working my way up from there, trying to, like, you know, just do me really, like. Make something of myself, you know, just
mm-hmm.
Obviously you first get here, you like, I think the problem is, I think my mindset changed from how it used to be, because I think when I first got back here, obviously I felt like a lot of my, I'm going to use the word lightly, my friends, right, were, what's it called, they had already sort of excelled, they're doing their thing. Like I come back and, you know, I see my friends driving, you know, they're living life, they're enjoying stuff, and I want to live that life as well. You see, I mean, I want to live that life as well. Why can't I live that life? But then, obviously, I had my girl there at the time, so she was just telling me, like, you know, just stay in your lane. Like, there's no need to be rushing with them. Why are you trying to? And it would get me so down. Like, why am I getting down for this sort of stuff like that? But then I thought to myself, like, that's a very good analogy she mentioned. She told me where like just stay in your lane. Like your time will come. Like why do I need to feel like I need to have all this flashy stuff? Like, and you want it now, but you know the only way those things can happen is with money. And to be fair with you, my mindset always hasn't always been like that. But it was only getting back. It's like it's a culture shock, whether you like it or not. It's a culture shock. You know,
that's,
you
see
a
lot of things. That's where I was gonna go. Like through what's the bigger culture shock? Like living there for 9 years. And coming back to London, like imagine you were born here, and going back to Uganda, and is a big culture shock for you already, and they'll probably treat you as a white kid, black white kid. Do you get where I'm coming from?
You see, that's the thing there. I mean, I'll touch on that in a second, right? With the whole basically within those 9 years, I was coming back and forth, but it was, and the thing is, what it was, it used to hurt because they give you a taste of a home, and then you get sent back. It's almost like in prison, you could say it's like going to prison and having your family come visit you for a bit, then they have to leave. So I was coming back and forth on the occasions, but it wasn't the same as just coming back and being here. It's a completely different culture shock, isn't it? Now, back on that second point you mentioned, why did you just say the last point you just said?
I said, like, when you were going back to your Uganda, they treat you like a white black kid.
Yes.
Because you're from different country.
Now,
like, because I've been through that. When I went back to my country, they treat me like you're white.
Like you made
unfortunately, right, the culture there, I think it's just the African mindset. I don't know. I can only speak on the African mindset, the Ugandan mindset, because that's, you know, that's the experience I've lived through. But basically, I struggled for the longest time with people sort of accepting that I'm Ugandan, because they hear my accent, they say, oh, you're not Ugandan. But then I'm like, why am I not Ugandan? Oh, because you don't sound like us. And I'm thinking, that's me. Same black skin as you. And I'm not the same as you because of my accent. Now, if I turn around and say now that, okay, I'm British, they'll be like, no, you're not British. So I can't win the argument. You see what I mean?
You
so
you're
torn in between the two. And so it's sort of the same idea. I mean, this is going to sound, I'm saying it's very, very lightly, but it's the only way I can relate it to maybe, for instance, mixed race people, how they feel in society here, where, you know, they're black and they're white. And so, you know, you go into the white side, everyone's like, but you're not really white. Then you go into the black side, but you're not really black. So it's like, where do you fall in between there? So I can sort of relate to that because I've had that experience in Uganda where, and I'm assuming the people who've gone back home have also had, you know, similar experiences as well. So it's like, it's not a really nice way to feel. And that's how, for the longest time, it was in Uganda for me.
What about you? Like, country?
What about me?
What country? Like, have you gone back to your country and lived there for a while?
No, I haven't been back for about 10 years. Just before I touch on that quickly, just wanted to say, what if you said that you're human? They can't say you're not.
I suppose, yeah, I suppose there's that as well. But, you know, I think, again, on that point, I think you get older, you start to realise, like, I don't need to be labelled as this and that, is this and that. Like, I'm not Ugandan. I'm not this. I'm Dwayne. That's who I am. That's my name. Mm. My name's my name, and I can't be defined by what people want me to be defined by. Oh, you're Ugandan. Oh, you're British. No. What if I just say I'm like how you said I'm human? That's me. I'm human before anything.
But the
else.
Society, yeah. What a society that we're living. We've been labeled to do whatever we do. We get labeled. Too many labels. Like, you're this and that. You're that. Mm. You get where I'm coming from.
Do you know what it is? And what I'm seeing at the moment is there's more and more labels coming through. Like, just it's not stopping, to be fair. Like, everyone's got, like, there's new genders now, which is crazy.
I think the labels are put there to sort of put you into some form of a social class to a certain degree, because whether you like it or not, every label we have comes with its own social class. And I think that's just how it's been with these first world countries anyways. It's like, for them to put you into for them to label you, then categorically puts you into a social class. So, for instance, you might, I'm not going to
segregate people.
Yeah.
You get what I'm saying? Is there's a lot of segregation in the country. When you see, every country has a segregation, regardless like what color you are. Even you go in Africa in a whole. I don't want to. It might sound racist. But I don't want to put it sound racist. I'm not racist. Like, when you look at a black community, there's a lot of segregation in black communities too. Even when I went to Kenya, I saw that with my own eye. I saw that in Uganda. I saw that in Egypt. And I saw that in Rwanda too. There's a lot of segregation in between people, which is really bad.
I do agree with you on that, definitely. But I think that's everywhere. Like, that's everywhere you go, there's going to be segregation. It's like, I always say this, and probably I'm probably the first on the record to say this. I don't know if other people mention this, but within the black community, there's, I'm not going to say everyone does it, but there are those individuals where you can't be happy for another black man's success. It's like you see another black man, and what's the first thing that comes to your mind? Like if you see a black man driving a nice fancy car, what's the first thing that comes to your mind? You can't think, you can't.
Jealousy.
Jealousy. What's the first thing you're thinking? My guy's on road, isn't he? He's doing this, you know, he's on things, you know what I'm saying? He's a drug dealer or something of the sort. You can't think this guy could be a lawyer, this guy could be a doctor.
I get what you're saying.
So that's the mindset we have. And imagine now, if that's the mindset you have as a black person looking at another black person, imagine how society in general looks at you.
But I feel like there's something wrong with the culture in general anyways, like just people don't appreciate what people's success, like no one wants anyone to win, and it's just like it's I think it's crazy, like.
I agree with you wholeheartedly, man. And the thing is, I mean, I can only speak from, we touched on this last time actually, I think we did, didn't it, where this has been the case from
for a long time.
From slavery days, that's been the case with black people. It's like they've always had a way to segregate us. And I think the problem is, okay, yeah, you can be segregated. But once I think you're aware of the segregation, then if you're aware of a situation, I think that's only then where you can now sort of fight against it or just rise against that nonsense. You see what I mean? So I'm sitting here telling you that, you know, this is what I know happens because it's stuff I've observed within my culture. So now I'm aware of it. It's not to say I'm a saint, and I still obviously have my stereotypes. I think this guy must be doing, even though he's not. But I think it's more in the fact that I'm aware of it now goes to show I can now change my understanding and my perspective of how I see certain things. You see what I mean? But it's only when you're aware of it. But when you're not aware of it, and people live oblivious to it. It's ignorance. It's not even about them knowing, they're completely ignorant. They think they don't know any better. And that's how society's taught you to be.
This is, I would say media. Every media, like when we, let me give you an example. Like when, I'm not trying to put segregation here right now. Like that's what media do. When white people do certain thing and then like extreme, and he will class as he was insane rather than what he actually done. Like let's say he done a terrorist act. They won't say like he's done a terrorist act. They will say like he was mentally insane. Like if the black people or in brown people do that, he was like, yeah, he's terrorist. He's that. They start putting labels in.
You know what? Big up Wiley. That's all I'm gonna say.
Yeah, big up Wiley.
Big up Wiley. Whoa, hey, big up Wiley.
Go and elaborate that. Why do you want to big up Wiley?
Oh, I don't think I can get into this one.
That's a bit of a sticky one.
All I'm gonna say is like, if you felt like I just left you hanging on a cliff, then just go and do your research.
I can touch on the Wiley thing.
Who owns the media companies and stuff, you know, that's what I'm talking about. But
Wiley went out and said certain things about, you know, certain individuals in society and stuff like that, which obviously was wrong. But I think where it didn't help was the fact that the black community decided to, okay, throw him under the bus. Like, okay, now, instead of supporting him, and fair enough, okay, he's done something wrong. Not to say to ostracize him and throw him, like cast him aside and everything like that, but at least sort of take responsibility for it, you know? Take responsibility for your shit. It's like, I think the best example to give is like, so I'm just thinking of a thousand things at the moment right now. There's a show I used to watch on Netflix called Underground, and it's a perfect example of what I'm talking about right now. Like, obviously, Underground was talking about, you know, the whole Harriet Tubman situation where, you know, she helped lead slaves under some tunnel to freedom and stuff like that from their masters and everything like that. So there's a particular part in the show where all these white folks, because obviously in every slave film, we all know this, in every slave film, the white people are deemed as the enemy, the devil and everything like that, using those words very lightly. But so there was only two white folks I saw in that whole film. In that whole show, who were helping these black people, and I'm thinking, I love these white guys. Like they understand that this shit is wrong. You know what I'm saying? So now, they're in the room trying to get these black people to like these black slaves. I think they're trying to get their papers right so then they can get them to get them on trains to basically flee slavery. So now they bump into these two other black guys, these two, I'm going to use the word lightly as well, thugs. They call them, because obviously that's how they portrayed them to be. Now they pull out knives and guns and told these guys, we're going to rob you, give us your money. And I'm thinking to myself, as a black person, I'm watching this, I feel hurt and ashamed. I'm like, what's this guy doing? These are the only white folks trying to help us, right? Help the black community, and you guys want to rob them. Like, where's the respect in that? So the point I'm trying to make to you is that I felt that as a black person, I felt ashamed for what those other black guys were doing. You see what I mean? So I can own it. I can sit there and say, okay, you know what? What those black guys did was not right. Blah, blah, blah. But those are still our black guys. You know what I'm saying? They're still our black guys. So back onto the point of Wiley. What Wiley did, yeah, okay, he shouldn't have gone out and said all this stuff like that. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, I think in the media, you've got to be politically correct when you say certain things. And that's the problem. He didn't come politically correct with how he said. He just out and said this and this and that. Like, you can't just label everyone in the same boat. You can't just say, okay, because of this, right, everyone in the society is like this. It's not the case. I mean, so that, like when I was here saying that, you know,
You know what's the problem is? Mm-hmm. Everyone trying to get rich quick. Like, even though some people that are trying to help you to get to succeed is a long road.
Mm.
Let me tell you this. I've become a pilot. Like, people think it's one way, like it's easy to become a pilot. But when you're actually in a game, it's hard. Like, when people trying to help you, when you see a negative, even a positive person will become a negative in your mind. Do you get where I'm coming from?
I agree. I do agree with you.
So people that are trying to get rich quick, and then people who's trying to help you, it's like, let's rob them, let's take money from them, like do a scam on them, even though like they're trying to help you to become who you need to become, they forgot their real purpose or who they really are.
I suppose that's right. I mean, the point I was touching on basically is just how, as a society, well, I can speak for the black society anyways, we need to have more solidarity. We don't have solidarity, and that's our biggest problem, and that's what's gonna destroy us, and that's what is destroying us. You see what I mean? So the example of Wiley, and there's been various examples. I can give an example of Jada Pinkett Smith, where, you know, during the Oscars, there was particular Oscars which she wanted to boycott because her husband wasn't nominated for an Oscar, and he's never won an Oscar. This is Will Smith we're talking about, all right? So she decided she was going to boycott the Oscars, and now she obviously came out public and said, you know, this is wrong, blah, blah, blah. They're discriminating against black people. Why is this happening? My husband's never got this and this and that, which, you know, I respect her for the fact, and you know what? We in the black community, we love to say black power. We love to say, oh, black women supporting their black men. We love it. But that's what she was doing. But then people didn't view it that way. People view it like, oh, you're attention seeking, you're dissonance and that. No one stood behind her. Uh-huh. And these are your own black people. And they're black people are quick to come out and attack. Yeah, I'm thinking, listen, this has been happening to us for thousands and thousands of years, right? Where they've done this to us. And now you're not helping the situation by now attacking another black person. Like, what's this? You know what I'm saying? And unfortunately, this is society for you. This is what we do. Like, if we can touch here in England,
rather than support people, attack us.
But listen, if we can touch it back home here for a minute, right? It's the same situation as, like, I'm not saying here that black people are only ones dying. Everyone's dying, isn't it?
Of course.
But black people, for instance, are killing themselves. Like, whether you like it or not, there's a lot of knife crime. And a lot of this knife crime, I'm not going to say it's done by predominantly black people, but when you look at the statistics within London, for instance, it's going to show that the black people who are dying in the hands of other black people, which I don't like to see. It's horrible. It's silly. You know what I'm saying? So we need to get that sorted first. And that only comes down to self-love, you know, comes down to loving yourself and loving others. You know what I'm saying? If you can't love yourself, how are you going to love someone else? And there's a lot of people who run around like this, you know? If you don't love yourself, and only if you really, really, truly love yourself is when you can show that love, project that love to other people. That's how I see it anyways.
Do you want to say anything on that? Speaking of Black Lives Matter, like there's some people say like all life matter. Mm. Can you break it down a little bit as in like when people say just Black Lives Matter?
All right. So what? Break down what? Sorry.
When people say Black Lives Matter. Okay. And some people just come up say all life matter.
Okay.
But what's the division?
First and foremost, right? Black Lives Matter. All right. So people just let people know that Black Lives Matter, right?
And also let me touch on that. And touch on that too. Everyone life matter. And I'll let him touch on that too. Go on.
Okay. So the whole idea of Black Lives Matter, basically, it's like, you've seen, I don't know if you lot are really on the social media thing, but let's give, let me give a very, very good example, right? So your house is on fire, right? Your house is, your house is on fire. No one else's house is on fire. Your house is on fire now, and you want someone to call the fire brigade for you, right? You want your, you want someone to call the fire brigade for you. You're telling, you're shouting to your neighbors, listen, can you call the fire brigade, right? They need to put my house, they need to put my house out. It's on fire. Someone else now is yelling, but hold on, what about my house next door? Doesn't, don't we need to call the fire brigade for that? I mean, the look at the logic. I'm giving you such an extraordinary example.
Houses matter, bro.
All houses, one full turn and say, but hold on, whole houses matter. All houses matter. Why should we care about that one house on fire? That's the, that's the best analogy I can give you for that. So it's like, I mean, it's been going around on social media for the longest time, especially during this whole George Floyd situation that was going around. People didn't understand, oh, what do you mean all lives matter? If you don't understand,
do you know,
right,
what, yeah,
it's part of the problem.
I was gonna say, do you know what, I feel like when people were saying Black Lives Matter, I feel like people were taking it too personally, thinking that what other people were saying is that their lives don't matter. No one was saying that. People, it's exactly what you're talking about.
You know, even like someone, Chinese people came up saying that Chinese people lives matter. No, but like,
one said like all lives don't matter.
Everyone lives matter.
What people were saying, and this is how I got it as well, and this is how I understood it, is that at that moment there, it's like how you explained it. The house was burning.
Thank you.
Just like that. It's just that's where the focus is. But no one is saying everyone else's houses don't matter. Like if
of course.
But if you turn around, for instance, if I tell you all Black Lives Matter, and you turn around and tell me all lives matter, it only goes to show you're not socially aware of what's happening at that current time. Because then we can't have a conversation with you. There's a book called Why Don't Speak to White People About
Race.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. It's like, it's a, you know, it touches on these sort of things. Like, I'm not going to waste my time with someone who doesn't understand the fact that I'm saying Black Lives Matter and you're saying all lives matter. You're not socially aware of what's happening at the current
situation.
People are not. Police are not out there shooting, gunning down white people. No, I'm going to use this word very lightly. They're targeting black people. I almost look at it like they're targeting black people. They're going.
But why is that though? Let me ask you. Why is that?
I don't know. I'm not in the mindset. I'm not in the mindset of these individuals. But all I'm saying is that, you know, the point I'm trying to make to you is that.
Let me ask the audience. Why is people say police or social workers targeting black people? If you know anything, comment down below. If you're watching on YouTube, please comment down below. If you're listening, message us on our DM and then on Airtime Prime. We'd love to hear from you. And I think we should cut it here and re-record. All right, so talk about slavery. Go on, touch on it.
So basically what happened, we took a quick pause and then something came up in the conversation. And I was saying that actually, from my understanding anyways, the point of slavery was to get someone else to just kind of like do the labor for them and just profit off of it. And then I was saying, actually, now what's happened is that slavery started evolving, and it's like, obviously now it's not even about the race no more. For example, huge companies, I don't want to say names, but huge companies would have people who are in certain place in life mentally, and they might not be able to kind of like, you know, kind of like elevate themselves in life. I guess that's the term I'm going to use.
It's called modern slavery.
Yeah, so it's kind of like, but it's a bit like psychological modern slavery. So like, if you think about it, people are still profiting off other people's labor. So it's kind of like, that's what I was trying to say earlier.
All right. I mean,
you know what modern slavery is like? Like, people give you less money to do the job. Is, let's say the job is to make this glass, it costs you £10 for an hour, but they will give you £5 to do it. Do you get where I'm coming from? And they force you, and they won't give you enough break to relax your body. They force you to say, like, I gave you my money to work for me.
All right, that's an interesting answer. So if I can just throw a question back here. So Leo, on your point, right, what's modern slavery to you now? Like, your definition of it. Like, obviously, I know you've touched it now. Why? What's your idea of modern slavery?
So slavery, obviously, it had elements of, like, physical and mental punishment. So I think like, for example, let me give an example, kind of going back to Yusuf's point. So say, for example, I get someone to make this glass for me. Yeah, let's just say this is all hypothetical, right? Let's say this person puts 10 hours of physical labor in making this glass, yeah? And mentally, this person is drained by that point anyways, mentally and physically, yeah? And after those 10 hours, I pay this person, let's say, like £10, like, per hour or something, yeah? this person gets like what, £100 or whatever, yeah. But then at the end of it, I'm gonna sell this glass for like 1,000. So I'm profiting off someone else's mental and physical labor towards something.
All right, if I can ask another question,
that's
right?
Every business is though. Mm. If you look at, let's say I buy this for £2, and I'll sell this online for what, £10. But the person that you made it won't think as I made it for £2 worth. Do you get what I'm saying? Like, it's about how you sell.
Can I ask? Is it still slavery? If let's say they are paying you, all right, let's say they make you work like a dog, and we know there's a lot of people out there who do a lot of graveyard shifts in it, where they do stupid amounts of work, right, and maybe don't get that much money. But then there are those who do graveyard shifts and get paid good money, like very, very good money. So would you guys still call it slavery if they are getting their money's worth, like they are getting paid what they're?
I think it depends.
Sorry. I'm asking. I mean, I'm asking.
I think it depends on how much you get paid. Do you know what my point is? Yeah.
My
point is this: without this person, would I be able to sell this glass of water? No. You know what I'm trying to say? And I think you know what? Maybe rather than slavery, I think what's really not fair in today's society is what the percentage split of profit is. So for example, CEO will be eating certain amount of money, but
at the end of the day, full risk,
that CEO cannot do this without people working for that CEO. So I just feel like both need each other, right? Like obviously the CEO might play a part where like this person's strategizing, making sure things are going well, this person's intelligent, da da da, whatever, fair enough. But I just feel like the ratio of how the profit is split is definitely uneven, and people need each other to make this thing work.
Yeah, go on, Costa, have a question.
We've got some people in the background, by the way, so you might not be able to hear them, but we'll just...
So, I'm just trying to speak a bit louder, so, you know, obviously the mic can pick it up. But I think the whole, I won't say slavery, but the whole mentality, I think, starts now, like, much, much earlier. Before, like, obviously the schools. We all know that, you know, when you go to school, you get that now, get that sense that you are trained to be somebody's employee. I'm not saying that, obviously. I'm not putting down this and anybody who's doing that, but at the same time, it's like you're not given the option that, you know, you can be somebody who can work in their own dream. You know, next thing you know, you start working with somebody, you are made to think that it's okay for you to work for their dream.
That's the best, yeah. I mean,
so basically, what you're saying is like, we are designed to be employees than employers to ourselves.
I think that's what he's.
We are trained to be. We are trained to be employees.
I think the word even trained is a light word to use. I would say the word programmed. I think how do you do it in school? You're indoctrinated. You're programmed to work a certain way, and they made people almost believe like it's okay, like that's the best you can do, like the best you can do is be an employee and, you know, make your money's worth, when in actual sense you can be much more than that. So yeah,
so what I was trying to say also is that basically what's happening is you go to school to go to uni to either pay, you know, for uni, invest in it, or get yourself a debt to go and work for somebody else. Mm-hmm. And that's your target in life. Do you know what I mean? We all worked for somebody. Do you know what I'm saying? Or still work for somebody.
Do you know what? I agree with you. I was just going to say, like, look, in school, no one goes...
Before I say to that, we didn't pick on what he said. So do you want to add what he said to the microphone?
You can add it, then I'll just add my...
So what you basically said, Costa basically said, is like, going to school and going to college and going to university... Like we are programmed, like you said, we are programmed to become employees rather than working for ourselves and become a more creative or become something that value for the society or for the country.
And it's not bad. I'm not trying to sit here and say it's bad to I don't know, work for someone else. I don't want anyone to take away from this that we're trying to say, oh, it's okay for you. It's not okay for you to. I'm sorry. We're not trying to say it's a bad thing for you to work for someone else. Like, some people might be okay with that, and it's absolutely fine. What I'm saying is that shouldn't be the epitome of life, where you should have to feel like that's like there's no further door for me there. This is all it is. There's much more than that. That's what I'm saying. But I mean, there are people who are comfortable, you know, they don't mind having, like, you know, 9 to 5, working for someone else. You know, Costa spoke about getting into debt from university to then going out to work, then work for someone else, and you never actually really ever clear your debt. So it's not to say that's what I'm saying. Some people are comfortable with that,
I realize we don't just work for someone else; we also work for ourselves. So, like, we might be employed by someone else, but at the end of the day, we are working for ourselves, right? Like, I work to make money for myself.
Of course, like, so when you're say this, right? When your employees and when you go apply for jobs, you gotta be aware what you're becoming. Like, when you're working for someone, what you're becoming, not like, oh yeah, I just need the money to work for them. What life is about experience. Life is about experience, and experience make you who you are. So whenever you apply for a job or whenever you work for someone, is ask yourself what you're becoming. So you become what you work for. You get where I'm coming from?
Do you know what? The only thing I was going to add to Costa's thing, like, no one goes and says, hey, like in school, like, hey, we're gonna let you do this, create your own business experience and give you like $5,000 to do that. They will tell you, you're going to get a work experience day to go work for someone else. And we're going to run this workshop to do your CV.
One thing that really, really gets on my nerves, and I've seen it countless times, right? And I've spoken to, because, you know, I was working in a after school club back in the day. This is one of my first jobs I had. And, you know, you just speak to these young people and say, oh, you know, certain things, just have conversation with them, sort of see what they want to do. Obviously, they're young, so they don't really know much, but, you know, they have their dreams and aspirations. So you ask a kid, like, oh, what do you want to do? What do you want to be when you're older? They say, oh, I want to be like an astronaut. And then they'll tell me that the teachers are saying, oh, but she thinks maybe I should look at something more like, I don't know, like a fireman, you know, which is all well and good, isn't it? But then why can't he inspire to be or she inspire to be an astronaut? You know what I'm saying? So why are teachers in schools?
There's a limitation. If you're not in that category.
But whose limitations are those?
That's what I'm saying.
It's in our own mind.
I know.
No, but then that goes back
if I can drive my point.
We had this conversation, just 2 seconds. We had this conversation before, yeah. And like, my favorite question is like, whose voice is it?
It's our own bullshit. Go
on, Dwayne. Go on.
The point I'm trying to make to you is like, why has it got to be like, I mean, how can a teacher tell a child that you've got a dream? We love the fact that you dream as big as you do, but you got to be a bit more, the word, realistic, pragmatic to the situation. Like, come on, man. These are kids. Like, let kids dream, innit? Let them do what they want to do. Like, if they want to be an astronaut, okay, yeah, they want to be an astronaut. You know what I'm saying? So why is that got to be so far-fetched?
The passing on their own limitations.
I agree. 100%.
And then the kids would grow up. And then they would say that I can't do this because of
you know, and then they've got that mindset and they pass it down,
and that's not even their voice, because their family voice, their voice was back in school, their voice was like, I have no limitations. That was their voice. And then suddenly they took on this other voice from either the family or the teachers, their friends, their whatever,
because they have never succeeded in their life, so they have never done it. And they're scared that they say to kids like, you shouldn't do this, you will not succeed, because because this is how society works, because no one has done it before. You can be the first person to go out there, change your perspective of community or millions of people. Like, you have to take that one step. I know you will go through a lot of pain, a lot of struggle, but from your perspective, that will change your whole society. Like I say, I will put an example. George Floyd, like, he actually sacrificed for a lot of millions of Black Lives Matter movement that happened during this pandemic. Do you get where I'm coming from?
What do you mean, sir?
So, like, we don't really talk about the black society, what black people are going through. Like, especially we're raiding, like, arresting or drug dealing. We only portray to black people. Do you get where I'm coming from?
Sorry, I'm a bit confused. Sorry. So
basically, we always pinpoint, like you said earlier, Like, if black people driving nice car, we probably start thinking he probably doing stuff, selling drugs.
Okay,
or,
yeah, yeah. So
you get what I'm saying?
We portray perception. Yeah, yeah.
A negative perception. But since George Floyd things happen, like, we became more aware of who we are.
I think the world woke up after the George Floyd. Not to say the world, actually. That's a very wrong word to use. Because the whole world, because, you know, there's still people around. There's still people shouting "All Lives Matter," which is ridiculous. Like, you didn't see what was going on, but I feel like the George Floyd thing was sort of the wake up call where people had to take a break and realize, oh my gosh, okay, there is something serious here. Because before this George Floyd, and there's been countless people who've died everywhere. You know what I'm saying? Especially black people. There's been countless black people who've died and stuff like that. But it happened to be George Floyd. He happened to be the one who got the biggest media coverage and attention, and am I happy about that? Yes, I'm happy about that, because the fact that, I mean, I would have loved all the others to have the same media, you know, coverage. Yes, I would, but I understand that, you know, with George Floyd, him getting that amount of media coverage sort of opened the eyes of a lot of people to realize, okay, there is something serious here. Like, when people were protesting and, you know, marching and stuff like that, like, I liked seeing that, because it made me feel like people woke up.
You know what I like about this protest? There's a lot of racism statues around across UK, and that got removed. Mm. And I was so happy about that, because we shouldn't promote racism. Mm. Well, we've been promoting racism since day one. That come from family, stereotypes. I know this is a big thing that we can go down and talk about it, but it's come from since day one that you're born into this country. Mm. The racism put in your mind since age of two, like, you get what I'm saying? That the way your family brought up, we should be more connected to the community rather than you shouldn't chill with
Look, if racism was poison, then I would just say, like, parents are poisoning their kids.
I agree. Or schools are, because whether you like it or not, I mean, schools do that as well. Schools program you to have a certain, like, I don't know, you look at examples in schools, it's only now maybe where things are getting different, but you look at stuff like homework and for young kids in school and stuff like that, where they have diagrams and pictures and stuff. They're not going to show every race. They're going to show one particular race. Not every single race is represented on that diagram. So it's already programming them to think, okay, is this what's right? This is what's wrong. And, you know, you see a picture, and this was a couple of years ago, where if you typed in young black teen on Google, I'm telling you, it will show pictures of locked up black people incarcerated.
Yeah, I've seen
and
that.
That's ridiculous.
Someone
and then you type in
a
young white teen, you see, oh, you know, reading books in the park, you know, with a group of friends and stuff like that. It's disgusting. You know what I'm saying? But then that's already programming already. And imagine this is from Google. Like, this is a big search engine. And I'll say this on the record. That's disgusting. Like, you should be ashamed of yourself for having
that.
That
research.
You know
again,
what I'm saying?
Like,
I don't think they've probably removed it now, but I'm just trying to give an example of that. Like, that goes, and, you know, it's that deep. It's that in rooted. It's ridiculous. It's nasty. But, you know, if I could just play devil's advocate just for a second, you know, the whole Black Lives Matter situation. So when it happened here in the UK, where people were protesting, I like the fact they did protest. But for me personally, I went for the protest. I did go for the protest, even though I know it was during the whole COVID situation time and stuff like that. But I think I went because it was like, I felt like I had to do it. And I think my girl wanted to go more than I wanted to go. But I thought, okay, because she didn't want to go because she wasn't actually seeing anyone at the time, which was fine. I said, I'll go for you and record it. So I sort of went on her behalf. I went for my behalf as well, but I think more for her than me. So I recorded it and let her see it. And she was very, very, very happy about that because she wanted to go, but she couldn't. Cool. But the point I'm trying to make to you is, like, to me, it felt more here like a flash in a pan. That makes sense, where it's almost like a trend. And unfortunately, in the UK, and we have to admit this, as a society, especially the younger society, we follow trends too much. We follow way too many trends, and it's poison. It's poisonous, man. We do something because it's what's trending at the moment. Like,
we forget about ourselves when we just focus on the trend. 100%.
Like, when people were marching, like, I like the fact that we did march. I understand that, but we've got bigger problems right now to face. Like, we've got we've got discrimination happening within England, but now we're protesting about George Floyd. I understand that, but majority of the protests here, people protested here for what was happening there in America. You see what I mean? And I don't think that's right. We should have protested for what was going, like,
within.
Sir?
well, what was within?
Yeah, yeah, like, yeah, yeah. We should have been protesting more for the injustice happening to us here, maybe as well as America. But the point I'm trying to make to you is that we love to follow trends. So whatever's popping at the time, like there were people celebrating, and I was telling you why there were people celebrating when, for instance, Donald Trump, he's not president anymore now, but when they announced Joe Biden as president, people were celebrating. Now, I was thinking, okay, it's all well and good, but why are you
celebrating
him? It's not really affecting England. Here is it.
I think it does affect us.
No, but not too strongly. I mean, the point I'm trying to make to you is the fact that we see a trend. If there's something that's popping off, like let me give an example of the ice bucket challenge. You guys remember the ice bucket challenge, right? When that thing was going around, like who understood the purpose of the ice bucket challenge? If I can just finish it, the whole purpose of the ice bucket challenge, right? I think there was an illness, right? That was, I think it was like where people can't really feel. Is it ACL or something like that? I don't really know the name of it, but it was an illness that was basically I think people can't really feel their they don't really feel their nerves, like it's like they have no feeling and stuff like that. So the whole idea was to basically create awareness of this disease. And I think now when you do the challenge, you now sort of have to donate money.
But you know what? Like, yeah.
And now people then made it a trend. The disease, amyotrophic lateral sclerosis. Mm-hmm. What does it do? Like, what is it? What does it do? I said LLC, but whatever. Something like that. I'm just trying to find. Just continue. Yeah. So. Yeah. I was just saying how people now made the challenge a thing where, okay.
You know, people need a reason to go out to celebrate certain things. Like, that's why trend is true,
but then it's a trend because people are pouring more on themselves. Let me stop you there.
Mm-hmm. Let me stop you there. About when the Black Lives Matter is happening during the lockdown, people need a reason to go out to do something.
I agree with you as well.
Because people have been staying in lockdown. I was not here. Let me say that again. But during what I'm seeing from outskirts, like what I'm seeing from like from another country, like people were just stuck in one place. People needed a reason to go out, celebrate, get drunk, or do whatever they've been doing. So whatever happened, the protests which I unfortunately didn't see, and I saw in a video, but it was a nice thing to see.
So your question is like, if we were in a lockdown, would a protest still have happened? Is that what you're asking? Or is that...
It wouldn't be that big, I would say. This is my belief. It wouldn't be that big, but obviously it would be big.
I think it would have still happened. And
it would have still happened.
I'm going to tell you why. We're living in an amazing era where we kind of touched on it. Throughout this whole conversation, we spoke about it at multiple points, but no one actually pointed it out. We've got social media. And I think it's an amazing platform. You were talking about the ALS challenge. And actually, without social media, we wouldn't be aware of so many different things that's happening in the world at the moment.
You see, that's where my question was going to come to you, right? Out in the open. Sorry to cut you off. The question was, do you have to know what's currently trending on social media? Do you have to know what's going on?
No, but you wouldn't know. I'm just giving an example.
Do you feel like to be socially aware, do you have to have knowledge about what's happening on social media?
100%. 100%. Everything that's happening. So I'm not saying people should jump or not jump on trends, but everything's on social media. Like literally, obviously there'll be a lot of like full stuff on there. There's a lot of lies on there. There's a lot of truth on there. But what's amazing is that one person can make a video, upload it on the internet, and you can see it for yourself without being there. And just to have that kind of like that tool to share that, it's incredible. Because for example, many years ago when internet didn't exist, like you could be in another part of the world. I don't know what's going on there.
It's limited voice. It's limited people. Since the internet came to the earth, that internet gave the voice to many people who didn't even have a voice. Now, what we're doing today is sharing our perspective to the world.
Okay, but
that's why it's
right now without internet, we can't share this.
It's true, but I almost feel like you guys haven't really answered the question or touched on the question I'm asking you. Basically, what I'm saying is like, you know, to be socially aware, does it mean you have to have knowledge around what's going on in your social media life? Because I can give an example now. I know people who don't like social media. They're not on it. In fact, they don't even have WhatsApp, for instance. Like these guys are so like they're so introvert. Like they keep themselves here. They're so to themselves. They don't like doing. Can you say the word? They're not really antisocial. They're social people, but they don't. But they're introvert when it comes to. They're introvert when it comes to social media. You see what I mean? They don't stay connected to social media. You see what I mean? So these people are just like, it's not my cup of tea. I know people in my life. I've got my brothers who don't really mess with that social media stuff, but they're socially aware. You see what I mean? They are socially aware of certain things.
What is your question?
The question I'm asking now is, and this is on the house, but I know he's got a question. He's got an answer for it. What I'm asking is that to be socially aware, does it mean you have to have knowledge on what's going on with social media?
The answer is no.
Okay.
Uh-huh. And to be socially aware, you just need to be aware of yourself first.
Mm, okay.
It's like if I'm not aware of myself and I don't know, and I don't think about things around me and how I impact other things, then I'm not going to look at other people and just situations and stuff like that.
So you know what's the biggest problem with social media? What's we start problem? To compare ourselves with other, even though we are on our own journey.
That's what social media is, though. People, I mean, it's used for various different what's it called, platforms. But one of the biggest platforms is we know people go on there to show off, like if you like it or not. You want everyone to know. Okay,
so I'm doing good.
So like, I'm doing good. I have the best solution.
Yeah, what are you doing?
If anyone that's listening to this and or watching it, if you have a problem with social media, if you have a problem with Instagram, delete it.
Yeah, 100%.
If you have a problem with Facebook, delete it. You have a problem with another app, delete it. You got a problem with having a phone, don't have a phone.
I've told people this, and I've told some of my young people this as well. Some people I'm mentoring as well. I told them, listen, social media can make or break you. Like, it can be your best friend, but it can be your worst enemy at the same time. Because now we're in this cancer culture period where, you know, if you say the wrong thing, it might not even get you now, but 20 years down the line.
This is why people need to become better communicating. People need to be transparent what they're saying. So it's almost like if someone's saying something, they should explain
politically
what they're saying a little bit better, because what happens a lot of the time,
things
are out for interpretation. Like someone would say something and it's just out there for anyone to interpret how they want to.
It's true.
And then it's very important to eliminate that opportunity to do that. And I've got a question for you as well, but go on, Yusuf, you go first.
Since the social media came, the communication has gone worse, I would say. People start posting stuff. Let's say I'll go on holiday. You go on holiday. You put a Snapchat or you do Instagram story, you do whatever. Mm. You come back home, you share it with your family. There's no communicate anymore. What did you do in your holiday? They already saw the video already. They don't really ask deep questions. You get where I'm coming from? So there's limited communication, and it really does affect your mental health.
No, I said social media can make or break, and it's true, isn't it? So obviously we all know now that you can make a living through social media. I can give a good example of Justin Bieber made his name through YouTube. Actually, he came up on the YouTube scene, you know, putting out his music, and lots of people have done this, but that's the first name that came to my head. I don't know why, but yeah, that was the first name that came to my head. But he made his name through YouTube and then became a YouTube sensation to then, you know, get where he is now. And so that's a good example of, you know, it can make or break you, but at the same time it can break you, because again, like I said, you can put certain and you know, Twitter's dangerous. I don't like Twitter. Twitter is just there for you to
Do you know what? Let's summarize what we talk about today.
Can I ask him one question?
Go on. Yeah, let's finish on the last question.
We haven't really touched on youth work that much, and mm-hmm. we spoke about it a little bit. Mm-hmm. But I just got one question which I've been meaning to ask you this whole time.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about that? It's kind of like a rhetorical question when you're asking. Not my question.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So like, you know, when you start telling people, like you might meet people in certain scenarios or whatever,
mm-hmm.
and you told them you do youth work, and then they ask you, like, it must be rewarding. Like, how does that make you feel?
I like hearing that, and at the same time, yes and no. So, all right, you feel good to hear that. But at the same time, it's like, I'm not really telling you to get your opinion about it. I'm telling you because I want to tell you. I don't care if you tell me it's rewarding or it's stupid. Why you doing that? It's how I feel about it. Why I'm doing it. I mean, I don't need to hear someone else's reasoning as to why. Oh, that's really good. Okay, yeah, fair enough. Yeah, it's good to hear positivity about what you're doing, but it doesn't really affect me any shape or form. That's what I'm doing it for.
How
me.
Come you become a social worker?
Not like, social worker.
What do you actually do?
Okay. Like,
what do you actually do?
So I'm an outreach worker. So what I do is I do, I work with various young people, but usually those who are from, let's say, disprivileged backgrounds. So I'm talking about they're leaving care, sort of young people who don't have family and are basically just almost like, you could say they're homeless. So we get them from the council and they sort of, we help them get into housing, we help them get into education, employment, you know, the typical stuff. I mean, I could tell you this stuff and you'll think, it's just stuff you hear every time, but it's only when you do it, it's only when you can understand. I know Leo can relate to what I'm talking about because he works with young people, and it's something that's, again, I can only speak for me that I love it because it's rewarding, and it's like, I've been that young person before. It's not to say I've been homeless where, you know, I haven't got anything, but I haven't really had, what's the word to use? People, I mean, I've got older siblings, but you don't really have that personal one-to-one communication where you talk about, you go deep and talk about life and stuff like that, where, you know, I can now project my life onto these young people and say, this is what I've gone through. Maybe what I'm telling you can inspire you to make you a better person. And this is something I never heard when I was growing up. You know what I'm saying? And maybe if I heard that, I could have taken a completely different path in life. You see what I mean? Mm. Completely different path in life. So I think it's good for someone to always have that person.
Have that person
in your ear telling you that you're going in the right direction. You're doing this right. You're doing that right. You're doing this okay. You know, it's okay to make mistakes and, you know, You're only human. You see what I mean? And a lot of these people don't have, again, like I said, they don't have people to give them that. They don't have those guardians in their lives. And if they do have those guardians in their lives, we've got people who have siblings, you've got family, but they're not really connected to you. They see you like, okay, you're my sibling, but okay, cool. They're not really asking about what you're doing in your life. Like, what's up with you?
I feel you on that.
Yeah.
So a lot. In my family, we don't really talk about how you're feeling. You know, when we see you're fine. Do you get where I'm coming from? From what you just touched on. Like, I feel you on that. Because it's powerful. Like, if someone dare to tell you, like, you're doing well, like, you're doing a mistake. It's okay to do a mistake. We don't hear that often.
No, you don't.
Because we think it's perfectionism. Perfection is the way forward, but it's not, because everyone can do as many ways. Because every human has their own limitation, their own way to doing stuff. So that's what I would say, really. And then last thing, do you want to say anything to the camera before we close on this?
I didn't want to say anything. I mean,
do you want to promote anything to? You have a minute to promote yourself. What's coming from you
at the moment? I would like to say, I don't want to, you know, say what's coming, because, you know, unfortunately, like, things don't work out the way that you want them to work at the moment. But there is something coming, and when it does come, hopefully, you know, I'll be on the show again, maybe, and I can announce it there, or maybe you lot could just announce it during the time. But at the moment, there are some things in the works. That's with Knockout Crime. You can follow us on Knockout Crime. That's Knockout Crime. What's that?
Knockout_Crime.
That's crime. Yeah, that's it. Like, imagine I'm forgetting now. Like, that's knockout, yeah. Knockout_Crime. So,
what is Knockout_Crime purpose is?
Okay, Knockout Crime. It's basically what we're trying to do with it. We sort of want to create awareness of violence within, well, youth violence within the UK, you see what I mean? Which we all know right now is ridiculous. Like, people killing each other, you know, young people killing each other, all sorts of stuff like that. So we wanted to use Knockout Crime as a platform to sort of show awareness of this, but also let people know that there's another way to do things. There's another way to, I know you spoke here about violence being a way for people to communicate or sort of like express themselves. And boxing, in a sense, does that. And it gives you that channel. It gives you that route to sort of let your anger out. It's not to say let your anger out and knock someone's head off, but in a sense, let your anger out on that pad, like, or, you know, on the pad or on the on the bag. We've all had that experience. You know, when you're hitting the bag, there's no better feeling than hitting the bag and thinking, yeah, you know, you just had a horrible day at work or school, whatever. And you know, there's someone who might have annoyed you, a teacher that might have really got on your nerves. And you now you see that bag there, you hit it like,
and I see that teacher's face on there.
Like, yeah.
Is it, not called crime? Is about anger management for youth?
I'm not saying it's anger management, but you could put it that way. I mean, it's a very, very big, I mean, I use the word very lightly when I say knockout crime, because it's like, what we're trying to, the idea of it, I mean, there's...
It's about changing lives.
It's about changing lives, but I think the idea of it, I always use this example, I love using this example where, you know, we can only talk from what we know. Boxing is what we know. Boxing helped us get off the streets, and it kept us on the straight and narrow. And it's not to say you have to compete in boxing, you know, to be a better person. We're just trying to say, keep yourself active, right? And this activeness will make you, hopefully, keep you off the streets and, you know, help you progress in life, whatever you want to do. And I always use the example of the ring, where when you're in that ring, and we've all been in the ring, you know what happens when it's you against the other person. It's only you against the other person, right?
It's you against yourself first.
But yeah, I'm going to touch on that. But the point I'm trying to make to you is that it's you against the other person. So you've got this concept: fight, flight, or sing, or freeze.
Or sing.
sing. Listen, fight, flight, or freeze. Right, that's the aspect of it. So you know, this person in front of me is trying to take my head off. What am I going to do about it? So now you view life like that. You view life like a ring, and that opponent is yourself, and you have to fight, flight, or freeze. That's how you should view life. That's the aspect of knockout crime. That's the whole idea of it.
Even you get a punch, you got to keep moving.
If you get a punch, you got to keep moving. You know what I'm saying? So it's up to you to decide what you're going to do. Your opponent is life. It's coming at you. What are you going to do? Are you going to fight, flight, or freeze? That's the whole idea of it. That's why we used boxing behind it to make people understand. It's deeper than that, though, because, again, like I said, I'm not trying to encourage people to go out there and knock people's heads off.
So
we're saying, try it.
One more question for the knockout crime. What are you trying to get out from knockout crime?
Well,
let's say three years down the line, you've been doing knockout crime.
I mean, we're trying to get it to level now. I mean, again, so it's only early times, but we're trying to get into a field of sort of getting young people to run this organization. And by people saying that, you know, I'm a big believer in, you know, seeing is believing, and you know, also you lead by example. So I can't preach the word to someone. I mean, I won't say I'm from the streets, because that would be a lie if I say I'm from the streets. Yeah, I've been gangbanging, also that would be a lie. But to see another young person, right, come in front of you and say, okay, listen, bro, I've been where you've been, I've done this, I've done that, blah, 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 and he's the same age as you, telling you this, and you're thinking, you know, I can be like that as well. That's inspiration. That's a bit of motivation for you. So I want it to get to a level where there's younger people, and this could be boxers, this could be athletes and stuff like that, who are inspiring other young, and what I mean by young people, I mean, so young boxers, young athletes who can inspire other young people to sort of get away from the streets and do something positive with your life. And so by these young people seeing these other people, they're thinking, oh, this is something I might want to do as well. You're not hearing it from an adult telling you, oh yeah, okay, stay off the streets, but you're an adult, like, you don't understand, you can't relate to me, whether you like it or not, you can't relate to that young person. It's better than another young person coming to you and speaking to you. That's just one thing we always know. That's why we have to use the words very lightly when we say, oh, to young people, that, oh, we understand where you're coming from, because really and truly, we don't understand that. They'll never see it in their heads that we understand where they're coming from, but if they see it from someone else who looks exactly like them, as young as them, they're thinking, okay, I can work like this. How did you get there? How did you do this? And they can use another example Actually, I won't touch on that, because that's not my story to tell. Someone else told that story, but I'm just going to give a small example of someone, you know, came into school as a lawyer, so met a lawyer, roughly he's around, let's say, not too off his age, but then he, after seeing this lawyer, he decided to pursue a career in law. So they're thriving now. So that's just a good example of, you know, I want to use a platform to sort of get young people. I mean, I would love to employ young people to inspire other young people to do things with their lives. You can,
you know what's the problem with the young people, right? Do you know what they see on a platform? Like, what's happening in the world right now? There's 2.2 million, which I said that in my last post. There's 2.2 million, over 2.2 million jobs are been like the lost jobs. Like there's no many jobs where youngsters go out to do stuff. So what they see is they need money to survive on.
Mm.
So the best way to get money is go out, sell drugs to another, but work for someone to sell drugs for them, like for big people. You get what I'm saying?
But then that's where mentors come in. That's where people come in, where you can show them there's other ways to do things. Like you haven't got to.
So how shall we attack on like those youngsters? Like how should we, like, is it come from family? Is it come from like people?
It comes from everything. I think it comes from having someone, a positive role model in your life. That's just what it comes down to, is having a positive role model in your life. If they have positive role models in their lives, I believe young people, and I'm, don't think this is gospel, but I do believe young people can change for the better. If they have people who they can look up to and inspire to be like, and this role model can be anyone, as long as it's someone positive, it can be anyone. It can be, like I said, it can be like a young football player, a young coming up and coming football player.
Mm-hmm.
And if a young person sees another young up and coming football player, think, oh my gosh, how did you get there? How did you get to where you got to? I can sort of relate to this person because he looks like he's my age. Well, I'm 15, they're 17 or they're 16, and you know, it looks like they're doing something with their lives. How did you do that? You know, it's more believable, it's more realistic that they can get there. In their minds, they'll think it's an easier path to take, because if he got, I'm 15 now, he's 17, and if in 2 years' time I can get to where he's at, rather than me who's a big 29. I'm telling a 15-year-old kid, oh, listen, yeah, off the streets, when you're 29, you get this job or this and this and that. Come on, he's got a long way to go. What about the in between?
People doesn't want to put the hard work in. They're just, like I said earlier, people just trying to make quick earn money to show off, to get validated in their social media.
But I feel with that, if I could touch on that, like people don't want to put the work in, but I feel like you have to know what the work is. You have to know what the work is, because I think in society it's perceived that you must have a wit to do what you have to do. Like you have to have some form of intelligence to start up a business or to do so. No, you really don't. Just up and do it. Do it. There's nothing like experience like this and this. No experience. Who went to business school to get a degree to start up a business? Who did that?
I don't think a successful businessman never went to university.
I don't think they really did. So I'm just trying to make an example here that get up and do it. Like
let me say what business is. If you buy this from £1 from anywhere and then you sell this for £2, that's a business itself. You made a profit for £1, that's a business.
Yeah, if you start selling sweets in a school, you'll get punished for it.
There you go. Because it's illegal. What you do is illegal in schools.
Anyway, let's summarize what we talked about today. And then, Anna, thank you, Dwayne, to coming down.
Thank you for having me, man. It's been a pleasure.
And it was a good point to end on. Do you want to add anything?
Anything.
Do you want to put anything? Anyway.
I've added it.
added it. All right, thank you for watching. If you're listening to Spotify and iTunes, please follow. And if you're watching this on YouTube, please subscribe. We're trying to hit many numbers. Well, let's say we put 1,000. What number should we put it down?
Minus 20.
No, come on, be legit.
Well, we're trying to hit on subscribers.
Yeah, on subscribers.
Whatever we can hit, man.
I'll say 2,000 by end of this year, and let's see where that goes.
That's doable, very, very doable.
Very doable, right?
Very, very doable, yeah.
Let's do that.
I mean, I can just buy some subscribers anyways, you know what I'm saying?
We don't buy a subscriber. We pull values out, and then if you're listening to this...
We don't do them things.
Listen.
Thank you very much for watching, and then peace.
Peace out.